If you're with us for the very first time, you're catching us as we are going to wrap up a series that we've been in for the month of June that we're calling The Recipe for Happiness. And what we've been looking at is this idea of contentment in life. What does it mean to find satisfaction in your life? And I think maybe a way to position the question is maybe even asking of yourself, what would it require? What does it require for you to receive or to have in order for you to say, I'm satisfied, I'm happy? And so I want to read a text that we've kind of hung the series on in Philippians chapter 4. We've read this already a couple times over the last couple weeks. But it's a fascinating passage of scripture. It's from the Apostle Paul as he writes to the churches in Philippi. And he said some extraordinary things because of the context of where he is as he writes. He is sitting in a prison cell as he writes these words. So listen to what he says. I'm glad in God, far happier than you would ever guess. Happy that you're again showing such strong concern for me. Not that you ever quit praying and thinking about me. Listen to these two sentences because it's fascinating for somebody who's sitting in a prison cell. Actually, I don't have a sense of needing anything personally. I've learned by now to be quite content whatever my circumstances. I'm just as happy with little as with much as with little. I've found the recipe for being happy. Whether full or hungry, hands full or hands empty, whatever I have, wherever I am, I can make it through anything in the one who makes me who I am. Before this series started, if you would have asked me, and I'm assuming that you would have maybe answered it in a similar way, Tyler, are you satisfied with your life? I would have immediately gone to the circumstances of my life. How's my marriage? How are my finances? How's the career going? How are my life goals? How's this purpose that I want to talk about today specifically? How's that going for my life? And depending on how those things are doing, that's how I would answer the question. And what's fascinating to me is that Paul does not take this stance. And we learned this in week one, that when we talked about the great pursuit, Paul says, there is something that is better than to pursue than the circumstances of my life. In fact, I have found a satisfaction that is not depending on my circumstances or dictated by the circumstances that are going on in my life. That if I find myself in the highs of life, I can celebrate with God. And yet at the same time, if I find myself in the lows of life, I can still celebrate and say, it is well with my soul. I am actually quite content. I am actually in need of nothing personally. Not even bail money, apparently. Paul's sitting in prison and he makes a statement like this. It's fascinating when you think about that there is nothing that I currently want right now. And in week one, we talked about the things that we want. We talked about the things that we pursued. And I just made the statement because I know it's true. We are all pursuing something. There is something that we want. There is something that we are going after. The question that I had wasn't, is it good or bad to want things? I believe it is so good to want things. I believe it shows that you have a soul that was made in the image of God to be ambition, to have ambition, to have drive, to desire, and to want to be satisfied. I believe it's a call to something eternal. That the God of all the universe created you in his image, a God of eternity gave you a soul that was built for eternity. The question that I had wasn't, is it good or evil to want things in our life? The question that I had was, the thing that you're pursuing, if you get that thing, will it actually fill and satisfy your eternal soul? And what I pushed us to was to recognize that earthly pursuits, they are not evil, but earthly pursuits in and of themselves, if they are the primary affections of our life, if they are the things that we are going after, then when we get those things, that earthly pursuit cannot fill an eternal soul. And we looked at the life of two men to prove this point, that it's not wrong to want things. But and I told you, the reason I want things is because I tell myself, if I get what I want, it will solve the problems of my life. Right? If I want a raise, what is that but me saying, like, I don't want to have the problem of financial strain or emergency. I don't want, or the reason I want the promotion, I don't want to have to deal with a toxic work environment or a problem boss. I don't want that. And so if I just get what I want, I'll get rid of the problems that I have. And surely if I get rid of the problems, I'll be happier. And we looked at the life of two men, one taking this formula that I had of getting everything that I want so that I could be satisfied, and the life of another man. These were actually a father and son, two kings. There was King David and there was King Solomon. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Solomon went after his wants like this. He pursued everything. He made statements like, there was nothing that my eyes saw that I did not look at and take part in. I did not hold back from any pleasure. And yet at the end of proclaiming and boasting about all of his conquests in life, he says this fascinating statement. Vanity It was vanity, a chasing after the wind. It was grasping at air. I am not satisfied. And you can say, oh, then maybe he's just ungrateful. He should try and want something else. And the point that I brought up in week one was, isn't it fascinating that you can get the very thing that you want, and for a matter of what seems to be moments, you have it, you're excited, and then it gets a little less shiny and a little less dull, and you put it off to the side, and you move on to the next thing that you want. And this was the cycle that Solomon found himself in, that he got everything that he wanted, he solved all the problems of his life. And really, what are problems? But what they're attached to every problem is a fear, anxiety, worry that we're trying to get rid of. And so Solomon was just trying to get rid of those fears, anxieties, and worries that the problems of life can bring. Isn't that what we want? We want the recipe for happiness. Surely, to get rid of the problems of life will make us happy. The tragedy of Solomon's snapshot of his life was that he had to find out the hard way. That getting what you want doesn't mean that your soul is satisfied. That you can get rid of all the fear, anxiety, and worry that is attached to your life, but that doesn't fill a soul. To remove something does not fill anything. And so the question for week one was, what fills the soul? And we looked at the life of Solomon's father, King David. King David's life was nothing like his son's life. David set up his son Solomon to be a king of peace, to have everything that he could possibly want, but this was not David's story at all. In fact, David not only did not get what he wanted, but everything that he had was constantly being stripped away from him. And we looked at moments of David's life where literally everything was gone, homeless, no family, the friends that were around him wanted to kill him. And in that moment, we recognized there was something better for a recipe for happiness, that Solomon in his pursuits for everything for the sake of contentment did not find it, but David in his pursuit for contentment pursued one thing and found rest in his soul. And we looked at David found strength in the Lord even in moments where he was not on the mountaintop, but when he was in the valley, and he made statements in the Psalms that says, bless the Lord, O my soul. My soul boasts and praise him. Worship the Lord and be glad, my soul. And so we talked about, in order to fill your soul, it's asking the question, where does my satisfaction rest? Matthew chapter 7, Jesus says, where are you building your life? Are you building it on sinking sand, or are you building it on something that is firm and constant and unshakable and not moving? Because when your circumstances leave, if your satisfaction is attached to those circumstances, so goes your satisfaction when they end, and they will end. So to rest your satisfaction, the recipe for happiness, it begins with the relationship with the Lord. And in part two, we then took a different spin and perspective. We asked the question, what does it mean to find satisfaction in who you are? When you look in the mirror, are you happy with the person that you see? Are you happy with the person that you've become or that you're becoming? And I pointed out, it's amazing that the day and age that we live in, it is so easy to step into somebody else's life, to want somebody else's life, that we want to pick and choose from other people. I want to have a marriage like that. We're just scrolling through Instagram. I want a marriage like that, and I want kids that behave like that, and I want a vacation like this, and I want to drive a car like this. And we want to try and pick and choose. We want to add to our lives because we feel like we're missing something. We want to make it better. Or we want to look in the mirror, and we feel inadequacy because we've been looking on Instagram for too long, and we want to remove things from our life. I wish I didn't look like this. I wish I didn't dress like this. I wish I lived in a better area. We begin to want to cut away things from our lives. And what I pointed out, and what I brought in week one, I just reiterated it in week two. I don't know if you caught that, but it was this. When has that ever made you happy? When has comparing your life to somebody else or wanting another life or to be a better life, when has that actually made you happy? It doesn't make you happy. It leaves you exhausted. That if your satisfaction in who you are is resting on temporary things, it will eventually leave you, or it will be ever changing. As we looked at, culture can't tell you who you are because it's always changing, and you, for heaven's sake, can't determine who you are because you're constantly trying to pick and choose from other people's life, creating this ideal superhero that doesn't exist, and then falling short of that standard. And so we found that there's only one who has the right to define, and what we came to the conclusion of is that the reason we go into that cycle of comparing, the reason we put ourselves through that isn't for happiness' sake. It's because we want control of our lives. We want to have the ability to pick and choose from our lives. We want to be able to say, this is how my life ought to be, not like this. And I said, I brought us to the fork in the road, which we're going to examine even further today. You can have control over your life, or you can have freedom that only God can bring when he is the definer and designer of your life. But you cannot have both. You can have freedom, or you can have control.